All right, it's 7 o'clock. Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phone. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. The AA preamble states, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And I see some new faces in here. This meeting, basically what we're gonna do is just read a paragraph out of the book, and then our panelists will share for a few minutes on the paragraph. We'll read another paragraph, and that's how the meeting's gonna go, so sit back and relax. Tonight, we are discussing step one, part two. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Aaliyah and Leanne. So we're going to start the reading tonight on page 5 in Bill's story. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw that I could take not so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind. Someone had pushed a drink my way and I had taken it. Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again. Some time passed and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then, and I did. I believe Aaliyah has won the toss.
My name's Aaliyah, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Aaliyah.
My sobriety date is February 14th, 2016. My home group is AA 101. We meet at Norfolk Sentara Hospital. We meet in the Brick House classroom. We have a lot of centuries so that they may guide you to where we gather. I have a position in my home group, and I also participate in the service structure within Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh yeah, and I have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor. And I've had the privilege of working with other women in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had this particular experience multiple times. There was one time in particular, I went out and I got drunk with some of my friends. And I got so drunk that she had a... I could not move from my spot. And I was just sitting there. I couldn't move, one of those type of drunken nights. And it was an altercation between her and her fiance at the time. And she was calling for me to help her, and I could not help her. So when I got out of that stupor, I felt like I could not safely drink. And I had written plenty of promises to myself, to other people, to God. I truly meant business. At that time, I probably had 2 weeks, maybe three, around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And but no sooner after that incident happened, I got drunk again. I was attending school at the time, and there was really nothing going on. I was a little stressed out about my English class. I didn't know how to interact with people. I was a good student, but I didn't know how to interact with people. And so I leave campus, and it just crossed my mind that, you know, maybe I should go get a drink. Didn't think of anything, nothing that happened prior to that where I couldn't help my friend. And during that time, during that altercation, she screamed out for me for about 45 minutes. I can see, you know, but I couldn't move. So I did begin to wonder if I was crazy. And I renewed my resolve again. I put some months under my belt, and it happened again. I talked myself into drinks over and over and over again. This particular instance, I had to write a paper for class. And I was coming from my dad's house, and you got to drive past the ABC store for me to go home. And I had so much anxiety. I remember feeling like I couldn't write the paper. I put it off to the last minute. And the thought occurred to me, like, if I could just get the first sentence down, I'll be okay. I don't know how I wound up with a bottle of Hennessy, but I wound up with a bottle of Hennessy. And then I videotaped myself of what I look like going through relapse mode again. You know, and just was like, well, you know, I'm here now, so it is what it is. And I continued to drink. And then that's my experience with that portion.
My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leanne.
There were a lot of mornings I woke up and said that this had to be stopped, and but I never said that I couldn't take as much as one drink. Like, I would come to and say, oh, that was really rough, like, I need to give some time. And then, you know, as the drinking progressed through the years, at the end it was on me first thing in the morning, and like, how am I gonna get my drink? But I really didn't give much thought to stopping through the years. I had my first drink when I was 13, and I never thought that it wasn't a good idea. Like, once it was on me, it was on me. And after that very first time that I really can recall deliberately going and taking a drink, I was alone. My parents are not alcoholics, and they kept a wine bottle, like a jug, a green jug, in the refrigerator out in the shop. And I had a softball practice, and I was fearful of the ball and being around people and not being as good and going out there and chugging it before softball practice. Like, that is not normal. And that was at 13. And all I could think of every weekend was how I was going to be able to drink. And so that was my beginning, and my end was what it says here. There had been lots of sweet promises, not that I was going to stop, but that I was going to do better next time, or that I knew if I gave it a week or 2 weeks before another debacle that, you know, the waters would be smoothed out for a little bit. But I always went back to it, so I never really thought of stopping. And but my last drunk, I truly meant from the bottom of my heart that I was not going to drink. And I meant it for the first time in my life. And there was a big party at my house, and the people got there, and there was no thought, no nothing. No one even pushed it to me. I just went to my bar that was downstairs behind the kitchen and took the bottle and just started drinking. And I remember standing there and looking as the tears are coming down my eyes in the mirror, and I'm like, this has got to get to me quick. Like, it's like I just let go, and I don't remember anything until the next morning. And that was the morning that I came to, and my husband just looked at me and said, you can get help or we're going to get a divorce. And for me, just that moment of clarity, I just said, I need help. And I didn't know what that was going to look like. I had no idea what that entailed. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about rehab. I didn't know anything about, alcoholics. Like, didn't really know any. Looking back, I think I knew quite a few, you know, in my drinking time. But, and that's what had happened for me. So, obsession of the mind, which is what we're talking about tonight, you know, had been on me for quite some time, for many years. And I could, you know, it says renewing my resolve, I tried again. I'd had all those experiences before I got in here, and I could look back at where I had been. And when y'all started sharing with me at that very first meeting for the first time in my life, I heard people talking about drinking and thinking like I did. And it felt like a very safe place. That's all I've got.
Thanks, Mia. I neglected to read the step that we're talking about, which is step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. We're going to continue the reading on page 7, also in Bill's story. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor, though it remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly, even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge.
So my first sponsor told me, I couldn't believe that my mind was, my thinking was messed up. I prided myself over being the master of my own destiny. It's definitely mind over matter. In essence, you know, I'm a very self-reliant individual. So when it was told to me that it's my thinking that's screwing me up, I had to put it to a test because I couldn't believe her. And that's what my mind immediately went to. I need to test this out. So, and if this is true, then, you know, then, okay, then I can agree with this statement, you know, that the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor. My previous experience, I couldn't see how my mind had got me into all of those scrapes. But I tried to look out for it in future situations. So I read your book. I read the 12 and 12. I managed to stay uncomfortably dry for a year, and then I got rejected, and I was uncomfortable about that. And I seen my mind work me towards a drink. It's like, huh? Well, that's only because I got rejected. So I read your book again with a sponsor, and I refused to consummate it with the 12th step, which we're not there yet. Come back in 11 weeks. And this time I was making money. I was doing the school thing. I decided to join the Navy, and I was uncomfortably sober, dry, with no program in boot camp, and I wound up in Pensacola, and I was attracted to a young individual, and they had this little this party gathering called Portside. And I was hanging out with this person, and she gets a drink, and she goes, "Oh, this is disgusting." You can only imagine what I said. I'm like, "Really? Let me try it." You know, if anyone heard my story previously, you would know that I always said I relapsed 7 days before my 2 years, but in reality, I relapsed, and it was like a year and a half once again, because I took a drink. And I was torn up about that. You know, my mind once again worked me into a situation. So self-knowledge did not help me. I get to my first duty station, and how do I communicate with people? I'm not working any type of spiritual foundation. I'm doing this on sheer determination, and my only refuge is, well, you socialize by drinking, and thus I talked myself into 5 fireballs the first night I started drinking again, and I watched the rapid decline from there. Self-knowledge did not help me whatsoever combating my alcoholism.
My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leanne.
I don't think I said that the first time. this is my home group, and my sobriety date is August 8th of 1999. And so I'm going to kind of talk about this obsession of the mind when it talks about our will is amazingly weakened. So there were times when in my early 20s I remember saying I was going to a party, so my friend was getting married, and I said I'll be the designated driver, and because like I never was the designated driver, so you know I got to do my part. And so I remember us getting down to a bar in Virginia Beach, and they're all starting to drink, and I'm thinking, I can't do this. Like I got to have at least one. And they knew me; they'd known me since high school. This was a friend of mine that I went to high school, well, all through elementary and high school with. And I remember saying, "I'll pay for the cab for everybody to get home. You know, we'll get my car tomorrow." And I drank that night. Like, it didn't matter what I said, what I did. It was just on. And so when I came in here and people started, I started to learn somewhat about what alcoholism was, and this will, you know, was weakened, and that I was powerless over it. I don't have a choice in drink. Like, it was on me. I always thought I made the decision every time that I drank. And, like, that I was choosing to do that. But my last drunk showed me that that wasn't the case. Like, I did not make a choice that night to drink. Like, it did, the thought did not cross my mind. I don't remember if we're going to read that tonight, that part in the book. But I, there was no defense, none whatsoever. And what we talked about last week is that once I have one, my body has an allergy where it craves more. And so that, you know, that twofoldness of this illness. And when I was around 11 or 12 years old, I had a reaction, severe reaction to strawberries, and I didn't eat strawberries for a number of years. And I remember being at a backyard party with my family and telling my mom that I really want to eat some strawberries. And she said, you know, after what's happened to you and you ended up, you know, at the doctor, the emergency room and having to have shots and all this stuff, you're going to try that again? And I said, yes. So all this information on this thinking in the mind that I have, when I came into AA, all this stuff, these dots started to get connected, that I got a mind that's going to tell me that it's going to be different this time, no matter what my behavior or what it has going on. That I am doomed, and I knew that from, you know, at 13 or 14, I started going to psychologists and psychiatrists, and for some behavioral issues, and you know, so I knew for a long time that something within my mind was not normal, something was different. And so when I got here, it's like, it was, for me, everybody's different. For me, it was a relief. It was like maybe this will work, you know? And so I didn't have that experience after I came in of having a mind full of knowledge and then going back out and drinking, but I had that of other behaviors that it'll be different this time. You know, I've had other things that I've sought other than alcohol since I've gotten sober, and I've had that experience of the mind telling me it'll be different this time, or, you know, trying to manipulate or manage for it to go my way. So, you know, I know today that there's a lot of action and footwork that has to be put in, that the self-knowledge of I'm an alcoholic and I have a hopeless mind of, you know, body and all of that, that's not going to be what's going to keep me sober. Like, something has to happen, and what my experience has been that it's come from the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and which has done something to that spiritual malady that I came in here with. Thanks.
Thanks, Nia. Okay, we're going to continue on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove.
So my situation, after I got to Japan, I witnessed everything that you guys were trying to tell me since October of 2009. I got to Japan in 2015. Everything you guys have tried to tell me started to come to fruition. all that self-knowledge, everything that my first sponsor tried to share, everything she did share with me started to pop up in my life. I witnessed myself go to extreme lengths to try to control my my drinking and keep it a secret from everyone else. No one at my command knew I drank the way that I drank, but I was definitely a weekend warrior. I was a nightmare to deal with at work. The me that's talking to you right now was trapped inside. And the alcoholic me was running my life to the ground. My last drink, I told myself I wanted to hang out with my friend. It was going to be her 21st birthday. And I wanted to hang out with her because that Monday, I wasn't going to drink anymore. Okay, I'm not drinking anymore. So we were going to go hang out in Tokyo, drink, do some shopping, come back, probably hang out a little bit more, and it was just going to be a day. I don't know why I thought it was a good idea to drink 10 Long Island iced teas that night, but I did. But I didn't have any power in that. After the first one, it was just like, let's go. It was on. Going back to the allergy. But I couldn't remember that I just burned my hand on the stove on Christmas. Her birthday's in the beginning of January. So I did actually burn my hand on the hot stove. I couldn't bring that to my mind. I couldn't bring it back to my mind that a week before I burned my hand, I cursed out my chief in a drunken blackout. None of that came flooding into my brain. I got into a sticky situation. And once again, I'm stuck in a mental blank spot because now I'm coming back to the States because of the situation I got in due to the night of my 10 Long Island iced teas. And I'm on a 13-hour flight from Japan to New York, and I don't have to pay for food nor beverages. And it crosses my mind that drinking sake all the way home would be a great idea. I don't know what would possess me to think that, being that alcohol is the reason for my troubles at this particular time. I'm full of anxiety from the events that took place. And there's a lot of uncertainty for my future. But that's not even on my mind. The fact that there's free beverages and food on this flight led me to get the sake. And I don't really think I ate during that flight. The consequences that came of that is, I can go all the way back to the beginning of what we started off this meeting with. Am I crazy? What's wrong with me? Renewing my resolve when I got off the plane and stealing a bottle of sake. I tried to renew my hopes again, but then Super Bowl came up. And I did it again. So I'm in this cycle of, am I crazy? Am I crazy? But then it goes, you're going to check in at a new command. You'll get sober in Virginia. You told your mom you was going to get sober in Virginia. You're just... when you get to Virginia, you'll get sober. It's fine. Everything's going to be okay. And so I keep doing this. It doesn't occur to me that the reason why I'm in this horror show right now is due to my drinking. But this challenge accepted. Oh, your mind is what it tricks you into drinking. Like, I get it. I get it now. And I do understand the powerlessness within my situation. I would not have been able to get this without, for me, without doing the things that I've done. I truly do not think I would be among you right now. I'll still be practicing the insanity of that first drink.
Since I was a young kiddo, I always had this thought that if I had the husband, I had the house, I had the car, I had the job, I had all this stuff, that everything would be fine. And that's the lie I told myself for a really, really long time. And, you know, I'm drinking, and that's what I'm telling myself. Like, if I can just get my ducks in a row and get all this stuff, you know, I'm going to be happy. And so at 27, I got married, I had the husband, I had the house, I had the cars, everything, you know, was there. And I was the most miserable I think I've ever been in my whole life. And I quit my job, and I spent 2 years drinking myself. There was that spiral. And that's when I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. So once again, this outlook of my life, of what I thought it would look like, that would bring me this joy and this happiness and all of this, I was miserable. And so for me, when I got here, it was that thing of, like, it's like taking a pen and putting it on a map, like right there. Like, I had tried all this stuff, and why can I not drink, and why can I not have a happy life? And it was that vicious cycle, you know? And after being here for 30 to 60 days, I was irritable, restless, discontent, and thinking, what the heck is going on? And that, for me, I think is when that nickel dropped, like, that I had all the stuff and I'm still miserable. I'm yelling at my husband, I'm becoming violent, sober. Like, this is a problem. He has a problem with this. And my sponsor said, I think you're ready to start going through the steps. Like, you're at that point where you're seeing this unmanageability, and you need, something's got to give. Because otherwise she knew I was going to pick up a drink. I didn't know that, but, you know, I just was coming out of my skin. And, you know, so I can, when we talk about this obsession over alcohol, I can have an obsession over my life, like that I want things to be a certain way. And what I've come to find out today is that Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed for some rearrangement to happen within me today, where y'all have given me some tools in a life of looking back at you. Like, I've got to help other people. This 12th step, I know we're on step one, but that, for me, that's what my life is about today. Like, anytime it's these distractions happen and I go into, you know, if I can have that car, I can have this job, like if things at work will go okay, or oh, if my husband and I'll take this trip, like all this stuff is just distractions. But I can get very obsessed with that, like that's the way things need to go. And it's just a reminder for me of my alcoholism. Like, that's what alcoholism is, this unmanageability. Yes, I'm powerless over alcohol, but that my life has become unmanageable. That, for me, that was probably the hardest thing for me to begin to see in my life. And that first 30, 60 days was, you know, a real kicker for me, that there's more to this than just drinking. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. Okay, we're going to continue on page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
There's a lot in this.
That's heavy.
It is, but this saved me. When I came back to you guys, I made it abundantly clear that I did not like you people. I hated the fact that I needed you to save my life. And sometimes I still resent that because I pride myself on being self-reliant. They have a whole chapter about me. It's called We Agnostic. But I don't like admitting that I need help. I don't like admitting that I'm different from other people. Only when it suits my needs, of course. It took me a while, once again, to get here. But after I learned in my last real spree of all those Long Islands, after that incident had took place, I was still drinking. I reached out to this recovery page on Instagram, and I was asking them to help me. And I told them about all my attempts to stop drinking in the past. I've been trying to stop since I was like 15, when I used to isolate in my room back then because my drinking was out of control. Sometimes my stints in around the rooms of AA would just stints to regain control. But once I realized that my mind was what was hindering me, that it would always lead me down this path. I was still drinking against my will. I didn't want to drink anymore because what happened to me in Japan, but I couldn't help but drink. I really had no choice in the matter. I still woke up feeling guilt, shame, and remorse. I was drinking feeling guilt, shame, and remorse. The chattering didn't stop in my head because I was drinking, and it didn't shut off before I went to sleep. I started listening to guided meditations during this period of time, and I still listen to guided meditations today. So I learned before I came back to you guys that I couldn't control and enjoy. That obsession kind of left me, but I really still didn't want to need you guys. But once I learned, once we got to this chapter with my sponsor, after I pretty much was told that I'm effing doomed, and I had to fully concede to my innermost self that, one, my life is unmanageable. I can't keep living like this with this chatterbox, man. And this chatterbox, makes me drink. It's like it goes hand in hand. That's when the realization of I am powerless and my life is unmanageable. It came full circle. I can't have one without the other. So it became completely smashed then. I can never regain full control. I never had control. If I really looked at my my drinking history, and even in other life matters, but especially with my drinking, man, I lost all confidence and hope. You know, the moves I was making was just not intelligible at all. I heard a lot of people in these moves I was trying to make because it was all to benefit me, even though I thought I was trying to be nice to you. It was all for me to get a drink. I dragged people in my web of what the F. I'm not necessarily different because I drink. A lot of people drink. I'm different because of the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body. And that's what my sponsor taught me. So that's all I got.
Thanks,
Aaliyah. I liked what Aaliyah just said about a lot of people drink, but they don't have the same reaction that I have when I drink. And there are a lot of people that don't drink just because they don't drink, you know? And that always amazed me. When I got sober, I remember going to, my brother got married a few months after I was in the program, and I was shocked at the number of people that didn't drink. Like, they were at the wedding and they didn't drink, and that was amazing to me. But this, you know, I conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, but I don't think I really understood how different I was from my fellow. Like, that's taken some time for me. Because my brother and my sister drink, and sometimes I can tell they've had too much, but they stop. It's not like they drink till they pass out like I used to. But they don't have that reaction. I remember my husband, we would go to some Mexican place and have I don't even know what they're called now. Anyway, margaritas. And he couldn't finish one because he got that feeling and he's like, oh, I got to stop. And it was like, game on, you know, like I will finish yours and order another one.
Challenge
or challenge. And yeah. And, you know, it just, that helped me to see that not everybody has the same effect when they drink alcohol. And but there were, you know, so many stories of that just through the years of, you know, saying I'm not gonna drink, and I drank, and that I was only gonna have one or two. And I think that was just to appease somebody. That was never like I really wanted to have one or two. Probably just like, you know, getting them started, like let's just have one or two, and then I knew I was off to the races. But definitely seeing where this is progressive, when it says that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. And I can look back, you know, from the beginning until my last drink and just seeing the progression, where it was weekends and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know, it continued on and on till, you know, I was drinking every day. And, you know, this persistence of this illusion is astonishing, and many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And when I got sober, I went to a lot of meetings over in Craddock, and they used to always tell me, Leanne, there's no door number three. And I'm like, what are they talking about? Leanne, there's no door number three. And, you know, one Gene, I think, pulled me to the side one day and he said, look, he said, it's, a, you know, you're going to live a spiritual life or you're going to die an alcoholic death. You know, you'll end up in jails, institutions. And it was, he said, there's no other choice. Like, it's one or the other, you know. And I had a lot of wonderful folks, you know, when I was new in the rooms that would share their experience with me and where I could relate to what they were telling me. Some of them matched up to mine, some of them didn't. I looked for the ones that I could match up to. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other week that I can't really learn on somebody else's experience. Like, I've got to go through what I got to go through. It helped, you know, for somebody else to share their truths and their life to me. But still to this day, I've got to have my own experience with whatever it is that is confronting or attacking my mind at the moment. And applying the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to it. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Lena. I'm going to, we have two more paragraphs for the evening. I'm just going to offer them both now, and then we'll finish up. Page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. Page 43. Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
So once more, going back to my experience in Japan, as I've told you guys, I didn't think of that flight back to New York and drinking all those bottles of sake. I didn't think about that. I didn't really think about when I first got to Japan and drinking all of those, drinking in general. It did not cross my mind until I was in the thick of it. And it was a Saturday thing, then it was Saturday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whenever I can get off the boat, so on and so forth. And I was told that, you know, if I have an alcoholic mind and if I don't practice the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is my normal. This is what life looks like for me. But as I've also told you, I pride myself on being self-reliant. I don't want your help. And most of the times I feel like I don't need it. but that's because I'm obsessed with my thoughts and with how I feel. So when I come to you finally and I realize how me worshiping my thoughts and how I feel is ruining my life and I'm possibly going to die because of it, it was definitely a huge, huge blow to my ego. But I'm primed and ready to possibly follow a few steps. But then my sponsor shared her experience with me. And this last paragraph that we read prepared me for the journey that was before me, and which was, are you willing to consider that there's someone or something greater than you out there? It could just be the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It could be the principles. Strongly practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. or find a higher power. You may call him God, Buddha, Allah, Yahweh, whatever, but it has to be something other than you. And my experience is I continue to fight against that concept, but every time I fight against that concept, I return to step one every time. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable. Because usually at that point, it really is, and I'm really, really fighting for ill. So I'll go back to the spiritual remedy, because my experience has shown that it actually does work if I just step out of the way. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Aaliyah.
I think it's in the 12 and 12 where it talks when at the beginning of step two about you got us, you know, this far now, what are we going to do? Whatever, I can't remember the exact words, but I was really angry when I got here because when y'all talked about abstinence, I mean, alcohol saved my life for many years, and to where then it just stopped working. Like, something had to give. And I knew I couldn't solve my problem. And I saw people in the rooms that were somewhat happy. They were smiling. They had jobs. They were there to help other people. And it was just that place where I said, I'm just going to give it a shot, and we're going to see what happens. And so my sponsor said, can you just do this for 6 months? And I said, okay. And then at 6 months, it was, well, I think at that point I said, I think I'll try it for a year. And because something had already started to change in just that little bit of time. And and I remember picking up my first year chip, and she gave it to me, and she said something like, I thought you were just a cream puff or something like that. I don't know. And but she found out that I got a will. and because I fought back a little bit. And it didn't get me anywhere. but anyway, so, you know, at that first year, I remember picking up that chip and just thinking, I didn't do anything. Like, I went to a couple of meetings. I read what you told me to read. Like, what is happening in my life? You know, that this is 365 days I haven't had a freaking drink. Oh, wow. You know, like... And I'd had that at 30 days, thinking I've never gone 30 days since I was 13 years old without a drink. Like, that's crazy. And at that first year, I had not completed the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it was enough that it got me to stay. And I'm so grateful for that, you know, for that foundation in here. And it's a... You know, for me, I was just willing, like, I didn't know what I believed when, you know, we get to step two and come back next week and we'll be on that. But I had no idea what y'all were asking me. I just felt like, y'all stay, I'm going to live off of your power. Like, y'all got sober and you're helping other drunks, and I'm going to believe in that. And so the group was my higher power for a really long time. And it's changed through the years, you know. It is an adventure. I look forward to that. I mean, the past, I don't know, year or two, it's really changed for me personally. And so that there's hope there. You know, y'all had gave me hope that very first night, and you know, and that for me is sharing today that after doing this for some time, like, there's still hope that it still gets better. You know, I'm still learning, I'm still growing, and I'm just really glad to be here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, we are going to pass the seventh tradition basket, which states that every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to support. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
Hey, Leroy. Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
I'm Elizabeth, an alcoholic.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hey there, how are you doing? On Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at the Colton, Virginia Church, we started up a new meeting. It's called Coffee with Bill. We read out the Alex Bill's needs book. It's actually very quite interesting and very good. We need a coffee, I'm just saying. But we need the address I got right here. It's 301 South Newtown Road, Norfolk. Any questions or concerns, please let me know. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
What night is that, Elizabeth?
Tuesday.
It's Tuesday night at 7 o'clock.
Okay. Anybody else named Elizabeth have an announcement? Any other announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, newcomers, you are the reason we are here. Is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. Hi,
hey,
PJ.
Hey, PJ.
Welcome. Anybody else? Welcome.
Alex.
Alex. Welcome. Okay. There's literature available right there. And we have books for sale at cost. Just please see a home group member if you need help with any of that. If you can fold it, it's free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come and talk to me. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. If you go to simpleactions.net, there's a little form there too. You can put your email address in there and we'll send you notices when we have events, super cool ones like that. And I'd like to, can we thank the panel again for sharing? great. I'd like to thank everyone who participated. After we clean up, everyone is invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, a boutique little owner-operated Mexican diamond in the rough gem of a little restaurant at 22nd and Colonial, right here in Norfolk, Virginia. 22nd and Colonial. Was that good?
That's the best one you did yet.
That, I know. I have to rediscover the place every week. We've only been going there like 5 years. I still don't know how to describe it. May I please have a volunteer to Kendra?
Yes, I'm Kendra. I'm alcoholic.
Nice and loud, Kendra.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. God bless you and keep you until then.
Right on. Let's circle up. Lord's Prayer. Father.
Amen.